Well, today's Wednesday, April 4th, 2018.
We're going to look at government policy, security, and cryptocurrency news in this episode.
So it turns out that there are entirely too many vacationers coming to America. So we've decided to implement this new policy to encourage even more people to come here and vacation, and that is extreme vetting. The State Department is going to demand that when tourists visit, they provide their social media history.
You think while they're doing the extreme vetting, they're going to have Mountain Dew and Doritos because it's extreme. This is social media. There's some wording in here. They didn't really spell it out, but some of the comments made mentioned passwords.
Yeah.
So I think they don't just want to see like your Facebook page. They want your logins for whatever social media, and they want it to go back 5 years. Although if they got your password, that goes back forever. So
yeah, that seems crazy.
I don't have social medias. I mean, I got the Twitter, and I've got a Facebook account that I only use for app testing. I guess I would be happy to give them that. But if you just say I don't have those things,
that's suspicious.
I would have to be, right? Am I going to get turned away? Of course, I mean, I'm not going to be. I'm a citizen, thankfully. But what if other countries do this?
Travelers would also be asked to provide phone numbers, email addresses, international travel during the previous 5 years, and any detail to any immigration problems they've had, whether with the U.S. or elsewhere. They'll also be asked about potential family connections to terrorism. It's like, yeah, we had a you know, cousin Bob. He got mixed up with the wrong people, and he ended up in ISIS. And really, Bob's just mentally handicapped. I just, explaining that to a Border Patrol agent, I mean, how would you even?
Also wrapped up in this, bizarrely, is something about female genital mutilation.
Like, well, female genital mutilation is no laughing matter, but apparently part of the thing here is that if you're coming from somewhere that has a high percentage of practicing that, you're going to have to review material that's not legal in the U.S.
I mean, but here's the terrifying thing about that. Half of the states have laws against it. Half. The other half, it's only illegal if you're under 18. Mm. What a terrible 18th birthday gift that would be.
I guess you could make your... Oh, it seems like there were... Oh, I'm trying to remember. I don't know if we reported on it or not, but there was a court case about somebody that was turning 18 and she was like, no, I'm not going to do this. And she had to sue her parents or something. It was a mess.
Oh, I guess at that point you are independent, so you could just escape. But in a lot of those communities... I think you would be bodily bound and subjected to these things. Yeah, so
I don't, like, is there, like, the UN, I know the UN has some kind of a thing where when something bad is happening in your country, like, you can pick up the red phone and the UN will send people. Can I, as a citizen, do that?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, considering we pretty much run the UN. You remember that was one of the big Trump campaign things. He was like, you know, we pay for all this. It's ours, and they're going to have to start doing what we say.
I, as a taxpayer, am paying for this nonsense. This is not going to stop terrorists. This is just going to be... There's no point in doing this. There's no point. I just...
Well, I think maybe terrorists are dumber than I would expect them to be, but wouldn't you run a parallel... You know how like you have your Facebook account, and then you have the one that's friends with grandma? You know?
Yeah.
A pro-criminal tip. Start an alternative Facebook if you plan on being a terrorist.
In fact, start 5 or 6 alternative identities because you never know when you're going to have to burn one. It's just how it goes. I would not be surprised if some of our senators and politicians start having to run alternative identities because they're doing some really crazy stuff that I hope come back to haunt them from like a legal liability perspective. The latest casualty of that is that the Republicans have blocked a state net neutrality bill. But the way that they did it, so this is like in committee, which means that it's basically being reviewed, and they're trying to put together a law so that at the federal level, the states are permitted to do whatever with net neutrality. Or they haven't, well, there's not really any details. No details have really been decided. But even before it could be handled in committee, the Republicans, which chair the organization here, split the committee such that there's no possible way that the Democrats who have, there's an even split between Democrats and Republicans, would be able to do anything to move it beyond committee. So it effectively killed the bill.
No, I think actually the Democrats had the majority, but the split was such that that majority was nullified because a few were, two were mixed together or something like that. But it was 100% down the middle. So a tied vote means it goes away.
Yeah.
So it was almost, if you would have been allowed to have the regular vote, then the Democrats would have almost surely won.
This was a procedural loophole. And it's so complicated that we as citizens don't understand what the loophole is exactly, because it seems silly.
But, and it seems like, wow, that's weird. They must not do that very often. Okay, we had the omnibus spending bill where it was substituted. And here in Kentucky, if you're not hip to it, we just had an amazing thing happen where the teacher's pension plan, there was a lot of debate about that. And so they passed a sewage bill, and put the teacher's pension plan in the sewage bill. So this is actually just a really common thing in government, which is fascinating and terrifying.
There were some people that commented on the last news that said that their countries have a law that you have to, like, anything like this cannot happen. There's a law that says that when stuff passes, everything in the law has to do with the matter at hand or something. And it's like, wow, we need that. We're like a third world country. And again, it's like, is there like a red button I can hit to get the UN in here to like deal with this mess? Because our government's falling apart. I don't know what's going on.
I don't think the UN is what we need.
Well, the citizenry, I mean, I don't, our citizenry is probably not that dumb. We know what's going on. Ajit Pai is facing heat over a proposal to take away poor people's broadband plans. And that sounds like clickbait, but it's not.
Well, it's, I don't know. This was a roller coaster of emotions. So there's a subsidy program that lets poor people get, what is it, $10 a month?
Yeah, it's about 10 bucks a month.
Toward some kind of phone or
internet
service. And most of them use it for mobile. Now, to me, do people really need mobile phones? I don't think so. But let's just take it at face value. Here's what it is. The change that Pi wants to do, so most of these people deal with like Boost Mobile or Ting. Those are resellers. They're actually reselling you data or time or whatever minutes from the big providers. You know, they don't operate their own networks. But it's usually cheaper because they buy it in bulk and that's how they make money. Pi wants to stop you from buying the reseller stuff and force you to spend that $10 with his corporate overlords, the people who own the networks.
Yeah. It's weird how this came about. So, like, this was not always this way. And I'm not sure about the wireless providers, but I think the story about how these wireless providers came about from this is really similar, because it dates back all the way to the 1960s when our telephone infrastructure was being established, because, you know, wiring an apartment building in New York is a lot cheaper for phone service, is a lot cheaper than, you know, wiring a rural community. But the government of the 1960s, well, 1940s through 1960s, thought that everybody should have universal access to the telephone because it was such a wonderful invention. And so there are some holdovers from that type of thinking, and some of it comes in here. With broadband, there are, you know, some stories that we've covered with like AT&T offering like the $20 a month DSL plan that they don't actually advertise or do anything with. And so with AT&T, there are reseller programs where you can sign up and get a small commission when you bring new business to AT&T, and you can outsource your infrastructure and things like that. And so AT&T went so far out of its way to not advertise the cheap DSL plans that there's a whole cottage industry around people like these companies, these secondary companies, setting up and selling the cheaper services to people that economically otherwise would not really have access to it, because sometimes you have to qualify, or just the service is so crappy, because like the $20 a month DSL, I think it was 256 by 64. So really, it wasn't much. And so this closing this loophole means that all of those resellers are going to go away, sure, but also the plans, like the actual cheaper plans that people have, will go away. And so will they do without, or will they just get a different service? I don't know. And with mobile phones, but what about broadband?
But they'll still get that $10. You're going to pay taxes for these people to get money, but they're not going to, in some cases, get the same thing that they could with that money. It really should be a matter of, if we, the taxpayer, are paying for your plan, you should be getting just the crappiest service that it really, they talk about, like, you need the phone to set up doctor's appointments. And there are things online, like, you know, things that taxes and stuff related. You kind of do need an internet connection in the modern age, but you can do all those things with 256.
Yeah.
That's so, yeah. And, but this is going to reverse that. Most likely they will pay more. Yep. They'll still get the subsidy and more money will go into the pockets of the Ajit Pai overlords.
Well, if you were telling me as a taxpayer, the infrastructure that I've helped pay for Verizon means that the poorest of our citizenry can get access to that infrastructure for practically free, I think I would probably be okay with that. But if this loophole closes entirely, then the taxpayers will have paid for the infrastructure and also not get any kind of service out of it. So it's like the taxpayers will have paid for infrastructure for use for a private company, and they didn't really see any benefit from it, which seems kind of nuts. But time will tell if it shakes out that way. It
seems like business as usual.
Yeah, but it doesn't. It's just, why? Why is nobody investigating this as criminal? Because it seems criminal.
Well, it doesn't seem as criminal as substituting bills.
Put passing on a sewage bill? I mean, why is this okay? Speaking of things that are legally okay and required by the law, Airbnb is going to start automatically handing over guest info to China's authorities. So, yeah, Airbnb China notified users Wednesday that, as required by law, guest information will soon be automatically logged with the government.
That's so, hotels already do this in China, which, not really, that's a little bit surprising, I guess. But so they're just saying, hey, you're basically a hotel, you have to do this. But the crazy thing about this story, that law applies if you just stay at somebody's house in China. If you're foreign, they have to report that to the government by law. I mean, that's
seems a little excessive.
Yeah,
not that China is Taiwan, but staying in Taiwan, I was surprised that doing literally anything there is like, we need a copy of your passport. And it's like, it's a little unsettling. So, jaywalking, how would you like to automatically get a fine the next time that you jaywalk? Well, in Shenzhen, they're doing a trial. This is not, they're not rolling this out yet. They're just trying this to see how it goes. They're doing a trial where it's a little bit fine you, but it's also shame you. So, if you jaywalk, it's going to show a picture of you on this monitor and maybe also text you a fine and do some other stuff. It's using face recognition to figure out who's crossing the crosswalk or who's not crossing. It's a crosswalk, and as a means of trying to encourage people to not jaywalk.
Yeah, they're going to send you a text message. Now, the text message is actually the alternative to the giant LCD screen.
Oh, okay.
Because it's too expensive for smaller municipalities. You also go onto a website, so people can go on and look and shame the jaywalkers. And if you do it enough times, they didn't say how many times you'd have to do it, you will lose your social score. Lose points.
Can you imagine if our federal government went to Facebook and was like, we want to set up social scores here, you guys make it happen. It's just...
I think Google would be like, that's ready. Surprisingly enough, we already have that. Yeah.
Oh, that's not disturbing at all. Well, for our next story, Ecuador has cut off WikiLeaks. Julian Assange, the Julian Assange guy of WikiLeaks. They've cut off his internet access. Now, he's holed up in the Ecuadorian
embassy
in London. And he's been there since like 2012, 2013, because Sweden was after him.
Rape and, charges, sexual assault charges.
And then they dropped the charges, but he's still wanted for jumping bail in the UK.
And the moment he's arrested, he's going to get extradited somewhere and he's going to be shot. So he knows better than to leave. And his whole life really is the internet. And now he's lost the internet. So it turns out Ecuador, in a brilliant moment of foresight, you have to say, saw how Julian Assange meddles in other governments' business and causes them a lot of headaches. And they said, hey, as long as you're here, you don't say anything about the Ecuadorian government. And he tweeted something that they felt violated that, so they've turned off his internet. You know, also, I was reading some stories similar to this. Apparently, there have been the people in the embassy, the staff, have also had a lot of complaints about his hygiene.
He hasn't showered in 5 years. He's going to emerge. That might not actually be a terrible idea. If he could get a lot of extra food, maybe he could gain a bunch of weight, grow some facial hair, and do some stuff. And then if they don't have any idea what he looks like, maybe he could make a run for it and actually get to Ecuador proper instead of being holed up in the embassy.
But he goes out on his little bout. He loves the fame. He's one of these guys. And, I think WikiLeaks probably, they're on the good side for the most part. There was definitely some political movement in there. But I think it's better that we know than we don't know. But he loves the fame, you can tell.
Well, how long until some of his following set up like a point-to-point wireless connection so that he can get on the internet from the embassy?
They're doing the Twitter hashtag vigil. And there's I can't remember what the hashtag is, but yeah, people are like, standing up. Well, when I say standing up, doing the bare minimum to express themselves about Julian Assange not having internet.
I've got a mental picture now of, sort of a haggard and beleaguered Julian Assange with like a salad bowl covered with aluminum foil. And he's like trying to pick up Wi-Fi all around the Isthmus. It's like, oh, this coffee shop should have free Wi-Fi. Maybe I can use my salad bowl and get on the Wi-Fi. It's like, yeah.
Well, that would be something you could maybe do if you wanted to be an activist. Get your hot dog stand or your, your Euro stand and put a really powerful hotspot in it. And drive it over there.
Just point it directly at the window. Of course, that might be bad, though. That might not give the Ecuadorian embassy any leverage to control him, which might be bad. It could just be his descent into madness.
It could also, the moment they kick him out of there, he's probably dead. So you probably want to be as friendly as you can. So if they say you got to be off the internet, then, read some books till it blows over. And don't tweet as much.
Got some exciting news out of Barcelona. Barcelona is kicking out Microsoft in favor of Linux and open source. The city of Barcelona, the city administration, has prepped a roadmap to migrate its existing system from Microsoft and proprietary software to Linux and open source software. It ain't over till the fat lady sings. It's going to be really interesting to see how Microsoft responds to this, whether it's going to be free licenses or free computers or something.
If you are pro criminal tip, if you're a city government, just threaten to do this because they'll throw free stuff at you, never pay full price. But I wonder how much this has to do with the fact that Spain is just straight up broke. They got nothing.
Rock in a hard place type situation.
Maybe.
Well, it said that they were going to shift 70% of what they pay now to shoring up some development in open source software. They've settled on the Ubuntu Linux distribution to use for their desktop OS, but they're also going to invest in some development to bring that up to be whatever it is that they need for their day-to-day IT inside the city.
Think about the realistic thing that's going on there. You're taking 70% of a budget that's going to an overseas company, and you're creating fluffy jobs for your horribly unemployed local people.
Seems like a good idea.
Yeah, that's a big win for Barcelona. That's a good idea.
Now, last week or the week before, we reported that Telegram was going to have to hand over its encryption keys to the Russian government because the company is based in Russia, and Russia wants to be able to intercept and surveil communications through the Telegram encrypted messaging application. Well, in this week, the AP is running a story that Iran is shutting down Telegram services in its entire country for security reasons. Wonder why?
Well, they already had some anti-government protests back in December, and they temporarily blocked Telegram then, identifying that that was a big part of the dissent was coming from organizing via Telegram. So,
I wonder how many people sent passwords for things through Telegram. That's like, hey, I need your account to log on to whatever. It's like, sure, here's my password, because this is an encrypted service. It's safe, right? And then you forget about it, and then it's just always there, because it's going to be bad.
How do you think Iran is on the phone with Putin right now? Like, hey, bro,
we got to work this out.
Give us those keys.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's possible. It's. I've seen Stranger Things.
Oil for keys.
Hashtag oil for keys. That's going to be the new social media.
Russia's already got oil, so that probably wouldn't work then.
Can you? It's just. I'm thinking back to the days of AOL Instant Messenger and remember ICQ and WinChat and just stuff like that. And did you ever think there would be a world where, political leaders were vying for control over instant messaging platforms?
It, It was just I didn't think the normies would ever catch on. And then like text messaging with phones. It's wow, it's become the new norm of communication. You know, this really lame thing we were doing in 1996. Here we are in a world where everybody does it. It's amazing.
There's not really a lot of security news this week, but there are a few more breaches that we can report on. So, did you use MyFitnessPal? Well, I've got some bad news for you. MyFitnessPal, Under Armour was the company sort of behind that. 150 million accounts in MyFitnessPal have been compromised. Yeah, so you might want to check on your stuff.
This was usernames, hash passwords, and I think your address. So I don't think there was any financial information here, but username and hash password, eventually, you know, they figure out how to break that hash password, and they've got them all. So if you're a MyFitnessPal user, time to change all your passwords.
Now, MyFitnessPal also has GPS data, but I couldn't get a good read.
I think it was more about your diet than it was like a Fitbit type thing.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So, it might be both. I don't know.
Well, if you put in there that you're allergic to something,
it's going to be weaponized.
Yeah, it's going to be weaponized. You know, expect to get the polonium in the mail or whatever, I guess. Boeing was also hit this week, which is kind of surprising. Boeing was hit by WannaCry. And so WannaCry's kind of fallen out of the news because, you know, there are patches for that. It's mostly been dealt with. This doesn't seem to be a new variant of WannaCry either. This just seems like bad timing on Boeing's part, but...
Well, they have these proprietary softwares that they use to build these jets, and that doesn't change for 20 years. You know, they're like the same... whatever.
No patches are installed for 20 years.
The hydraulics that control the rudder, you know, it's like, oh, that's the same as it was back then. So they just don't upgrade the operating system because it might disrupt that software from working. And that seems to have bitten them in the ass because WannaCry got in.
Yeah, it's sort of news in and of itself that WannaCry got in. But they had this to say, which really doesn't sound too bad. It's like, we've done the final assessment, said Linda Mills, the head of communications for Boeing Commercial Airplanes. The vulnerability was limited to just a few machines. We've deployed software patches. There was no interruption in the 777 jet program or any of our other programs. She's, of course, talking about the manufacturing and assembly line. So I guess this wasn't really a big deal for Boeing other than just the headlines and the egg on their face.
Well, they said they shut down one factory for 24 hours and one for 96 hours. Yeah. It had to cost money.
Yeah, I guess some people are going to have to work double shifts to make it up or whatever. But overall, they said their production is not really affected in the long term, I guess. The
interesting thing about WannaCry is... WannaCry doesn't work anymore as ransomware. You can't pay the ransom. That was broken early on in the WannaCry. So this is just purely to hurt you at this point. This was malicious. But
in before the Russians.
You got to blame them, right? But so it wasn't about getting money. It was just about harming Boeing, whoever did this.
A disgruntled employee or the Russians? Mostly the Russians. Let's blame the Russians.
Why not both?
Incoming Trump tweet about the Russians and Boeing. No. Because that's not how that works.
Well, Trump is with the Russians.
Card data has been stolen from 5 million Saks and Lord & Taylor customers. So, yeah. If you shop at Saks or Lord & Taylor, well, I've got some bad news for you. This was malware on the point-of-sale systems, not from an internet breach. So... this is like physical brick and mortar security issues.
Yeah, they figure that it was fished into their computers at the checkouts and stuff, and it was just the people who were shopping there. Of course, these are very upscale stores, so a lot of high limit credit cards stolen there.
Also making the news this week pretty much everywhere is the volatility of the crypto market. Not just Bitcoin, but pretty much all coins are affected. You know, the crypto market is, you know, seeing monthly lows. BTC is trading around 7,000. Actually, it's less than 7,000. It's quite a bit less than 7,000 as of the time of this article.
I think Litecoin got off, though, unless it dropped in the meantime. It was doing okay.
It's dropped a little bit. Looks like Bitcoin Cash and... EOS, I don't know what that one is. I don't recognize it immediately off the top of my head. It's up a little bit. So they were freaking out at about 7,000, but you know, when we're recording this, it's floating around 6,500.
Now it could be that it seems like everybody all at once has decided that crypto advertising is something they don't want anything to do with. So yeah. We've got Google, Facebook, Twitter.
MailChimp.
Oh, yeah, MailChimp. Well, that's the story coming up later. And it seems like there's this full court press against. And then, of course, ICOs. I saw some study where they said like 90% of ICOs are now just scams because
it's so easy.
And people are just, you know, they're desperate to get into it. So
the level one coin will be coming to a something near you. Oh, there goes our monetization. No.
Yeah. So it's unfortunate if you bought in at the $20,000 mark.
Ooh. You're going to be hanging in there a while before your stuff recovers. But this is the first time Bitcoin has done this. I mean, I remember the first time it was up to like 1,200 and then it was like back down at like 600.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was, you know, 6,000.
Well, when during the year last year did it ramp up? Was it like February?
I don't have that.
I mean, it was 1,500 or something before then. So
there's a chart in here, but it's a little myopic in terms of like how far back in time it goes.
One thing, it's like the MailChimp story and then you know, like these, the bans. One of the things they are banning are the newsletters because anybody who's claiming to know what's happening in the crypto market is full of it. And yeah. you shouldn't pay to get that information because nobody knows.
Yeah. So MailChimp has, is the latest to join the bandwagon of no crypto advertising as we were mentioning. And, MailChimp previously held policies prohibiting multi-level marketing, make money online businesses, and industries that have higher than average abuse complaints, and earmarked all this other stuff. So it's easy to imagine that, you know, as long as Bitcoin is riding high, you've got your mailing list, you send everybody emails, and they're like, this is great, everything is good. But then as soon as the market turns and then everybody gets your newsletter about cryptocurrency or the next ICO or whatever, they're reporting you for spam. And that hurts the deliverability of MailChimp servers and the server's ability to deliver other types of messages all over the internet. So, of course, they have to cut off those types of customers.
But I bet they're still allowing the same kind of newsletters for traditional investing,
yeah.
Which are equally full of shit.
Pork bellies are going to do this year. And it's like, well, unless you've done something bad to get like the report ahead of time, you don't know. So what you're saying is that college students should not be taking their student loan money and using it to buy cryptocurrency?
College students shouldn't be taking their student loan money and doing anything with it other than going to college.
Well, I was reading this and I got about halfway through and then the thought occurred to me. Colleges are feeling the squeeze. The cost of education is up. The number of students spending a bunch of money on education is down. What if this is a little bit manufactured? What if institutions of higher learning want to be the ones to immediately directly receive that student loan money, and then they'll be responsible for making sure the student gets it.
Oh, so you're saying they did this story on purpose to try to convince you? It's like, here's an easy way to get cryptocurrency money?
Yeah.
I think because they are allowed to chase you to the ends of the earth to get that money back, that is a pretty safe bet. I mean, yeah, there's certainly... They want to get you to spend that money no matter what. And that's why I guess we don't have any rules about there should be a student loan where the money just gets paid to the institution and then you deal with.
I think that's what they would want. The institutions would want, especially during the squeeze that they're feeling for that kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe not a bad idea. But of course there are, you know, it's so much to do. You have to have living expenses outside of that. So you probably still would have to give them some discretionary money. And if they use it to buy cryptocurrencies, then so be it.
No. You give them a credit card that only works in the university's grocery store.
Yeah, and then they mark it up. We've seen those stores. I think, see, this argument, I'm always going to be on the side of, and I thought when I was in college, it was like, hey, you can't have girls in your room after this amount of time. And it's like, what, don't you call us adults at this point? Like, isn't this supposed to be the time in our lives where we learn responsibility and not to be babied? And I kind of see a trend in our society where people don't ever make that transition. And I think this kind of thing might be. So I say, let them buy the crypto.
Spectacular.
Yeah. Cause sometimes you got to learn that lesson.
How else are you going to learn? I can see that. The shocking thing here was that the student loan report says that they surveyed 1,000 college students for this, and they found that 21%, which seems shockingly high, have Sally Mae to thank for their cryptocurrency investment. It wasn't clear to me if that 21% was like, well, you know, I've got $500 left in discretionary money, I'm going to put that in Bitcoin, or it's like, you know, I'm not going to college this semester, I'll just put it in Bitcoin.
I always bring this up when you talk about a poll, a survey that you do over the phone, because the smartest people hear that somebody's doing a survey on the phone and they hang up. So you're talking about
the 21% skewed,
the lowest common denominator answering a survey.
Yeah. I guess you could get on board the cryptocurrency hype train, and it's like, oh, I've got to do this. But here's here's a pro student tip. Is that what we're doing? A pro student tip? I don't know. Student loans are unlike other loans in that they survive bankruptcy. So in terms of like the whole life lesson thing, that is a really, really tough life lesson to learn, because it's like, if I get it over my head, I'll just file for bankruptcy. Guess what? Student loans, which is some of the first kind of loans that you get in your life, survive bankruptcy. Now, a home loan or an auto loan, yeah, you can just bankruptcy your way out of that, no problem. Student loans, not so much.
So wage garnishing is a thing with student loans. So you think, I'm just going to ignore it, nothing bad's going to happen, and then all of a sudden they get their money one way or the other.
You can't even, so your money's not yours.
Don't mess around with the IRS's money, and don't mess around with the student loan money. That's important lessons.
Also, a big pro-criminal tip this week. It turns out Monero is not quite as anonymous as we once thought. I'm having some trouble with the ad scrolly thing here, but so they figured out that a long time ago on the Monero network, you could opt out of the like fake coin mixing thing that it does to try to help anonymity. And if any of those coins that have that functionality turned off are used today, those transactions can be traced all the way back to that in the beginning of time, because blockchain, which will help you figure out which coins in a transaction are real and which ones are fake.
There was another problem where the real coin was almost always the most recently transacted coin in all of those transactions. So between the two, it's not super hard to figure out which one. Now, I don't know if it's guaranteed enough to be something that you could get away with in court.
It's 90%. So I think for like the drug task force people, I think that would be plenty.
Well, it would be enough for them to get like a warrant or something. You might have some, but at that point you're already in prison or in jail waiting, you know, doing your trial and stuff. So
yeah.
Of course, the dark web stuff switched from Bitcoin to Monero because it was easier, so they thought, to hide the transactions, but seems like that's not the case. And the bad news is the blockchain means that even if you did this years ago, they can now go back and deconstruct it.
The indelible permanence of the blockchain is both its greatest strength and its greatest weakness. So, yeah.
Now, they did patch the first thing you talked about in 2017, and they are talking about maybe trying to come up with a way to fix the other thing. So they're aware of it, and they realize that the anonymity is a selling point for their service. So maybe they'll do something with it. In the meantime, maybe don't buy OxyContin online.
This is actually a pretty good article, because they talked to one of the lead guy or one of the lead programmers or whatever on Monero. And I thought his quote was pretty good, which is, you know, privacy is not a feature that you just have. Privacy is part of a constant cat and mouse battle, and it's going to be something that evolves over time. So, of course, we're always trying to be on top of it, and we're always trying to figure out what we need to do in order to preserve anonymity, because blah, blah, blah. So it's good lip service. I mean, they've got a good PR person handling that, if nothing else.
And it is still better than Bitcoin in terms of privacy. So if you're going to use one, use Monero.
In other Bitcoin news this week, this is really strange. Intel has filed a patent application for a Bitcoin mining accelerator. Not really sure what to make of this. It's like, because the software and hardware utilized in Bitcoin mining uses brute force to repeatedly and endlessly perform SHA 256 functions, the process of Bitcoin mining can be very power intensive and utilize large amounts of hardware space. The embodiments described here optimize Bitcoin mining operations by reducing the space utilized and power consumed by Bitcoin mining hardware. Seems like Intel's a little late to the party here.
Eh, I suppose you could apply this to future ones, although it seems like most cryptocurrencies are getting away from the Bitcoin model and trying to go the way of Monero and Ethereum and stuff like that and make it more approachable for non-ASICs.
Yeah, ASIC-resistant algorithms because, you know, he who controls the silicon controls the flow of the dollar or whatever.
But if you could, I don't know, I guess with the ASICs it really doesn't matter. But if you patent that, would it apply to all future endeavors to do this kind of thing and not just Bitcoin?
I would think that the prior art from the people that are currently doing stuff with ASICs would, I don't think there's anything patentable here. I don't see how this could possibly work.
It could be just one of these things because, you know, we do report on a lot of stories and a lot of hardware news comes out. It's like, ooh, they file a patent. What are they doing? What are they doing? And sometimes it's just, they just filed a patent. They're never going to do anything with it.
They're never going to be granted said patent. I don't know. It got CoinDesk up in a roar. CoinDesk is the one who decided to carry this story. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I think at the same time, you know, they're just looking for any little scrap of crypto news because it's so hot right now. Gotta get those clicks, man.
Well, it's, you know, how can we combine current topical news and Bitcoin or cryptocurrency in general? It's like we just had Easter. Maybe we can combine Easter and cryptocurrency somehow.
I think you might have misinterpreted the story somewhat.
Bunny Token may be the smartest investment since Bitcoin and the sale has begun. So yeah, we were talking about ICOs and Bunny, it's the Easter Bunny. That's not what
this
that
bunny
is.
Does not bring chocolate.
Brings cryptocurrency. I'll take cryptocurrency over chocolate. That's fine.
So Bunny Token is your solution. Of course, you've been looking for a solution, right, on how to pay for your pornography. You don't want it on your credit card, for the love of God. Your significant other is going to see that. It's going to be embarrassing. And, you know, it's the other ways they can't prove that you're a certain age. And it's, I look, show that one on the screen there. I love that the little bunny all the way on the right has the yeah. ball gag in its mouth. So yeah, this is the crypto for sex services. And this is from Cointelegraph. Cointelegraph thinks this is an amazing idea. I don't understand, though, why this is better than just using any other cryptocurrency to pay for your pornography.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess you, if you wanted anonymity, you know, you're back to sort of Monero. Why would you have this in the first place? Is there going to be like a central authority for this that's going to keep it regulated?
Or? Maybe they're looking to do kind of like the Steemit thing where producing pornography allows you to create bunny tokens.
Oh, that's going to be problematic because there's a lot of weird laws around that in terms of like the record keepers and stuff, because you have to, somebody has to, like there has to be a thing, and it's like if there's ever any question about the age of the people involved with that or whatever, they have to be able to get a hold of somebody who is legally responsible for keeping the records for like 20 years or something.
And a lot of these websites, they do credit card processing because that proves you're 18. Because you can't get. Now, they have talked about there's a CRM and there's a payment gateway that's already built to work with this. So I think it might be sort of like a PayPal thing where this just gets you up and running to sell porn in a very simple way. So you don't have to go through a bank. You know how difficult it is when you're doing an e-store, online sales. You got to set up a bank account. You got to go through all that. This could be a way. If you're just, you know, you're a hot young 18-year-old and you're ready to give yourself to the world, but you don't know how to do the business end of it, then this could get you set up quickly, maybe. I don't know.
Seems like a scam, maybe, possibly. Like the kind, well, I mean, let's like, okay. So 4 million in January of this year and went on to gain major media attention over the next 2 months, receiving excellent ratings of 4.3 out of 5. Because I think we've mentioned BunnyCoin before. And, you know, the leading ranking website, ICO Bench, 99 out of 100 from Track ICO. It has been called a revolutionary platform and the new Bitcoin for the adult industry. It reads like a press release.
You know, it'd be great is if this gave us sort of a market, you know, a unified market for the price of sex services, right? So You don't have to haggle.
Well, I know that that's certainly one of the most uncomfortable things, like, you know, the haggling portion.
And if there's a boom time where, you know, it's like there's a flood of sex services on the market, then the market could come down and you could get some real bargains, you know, like during the Super Bowl or, you know, I don't know. And maybe in drought times, like during Christmas, the market goes up. That would be fantastic.
So can we turn this into like a commodities exchange? Like, could I just buy a bunch of tokens while they're low and then sell them when they're high without actually, like, I could just be a commodity?
Well, no, you don't sell them. You trade them.
Okay.
For the act.
Well, yeah. I don't actually want to. I just want to. It's like securities.
Oh, so you just want to be a speculator.
Yeah.
That's what's wrong with the bunny token industry is the speculators driving up the prices and skewing things that it's not even realistic.
Wow, it would be really cool. Like, if you could find a token for, like, some obscure thing and just buy all the tokens. Like, literally just control the market.
But then, there has to be that fungibility. So, all of a sudden, every sex worker has to perform every act that there's a token for.
I'm pretty sure I saw this in ancient Rome. Like, you would have a...
had the coins for that.
All right, we'll see you guys on Friday.